wounds of the ships and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those Africans, shackled in leg irons and enslaved, step out of the acres of cane fields and cotton fields and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. Those lynched in the magnolias, swinging on the limbs of the weeping willows, rotting food for the vultures, step down and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those tied, bound, and whipped from Brazil to Mississippi, step out and tell your story. Those in Jamaica, in the fields of Cuba, in the swamps of Florida, the rice fields of South Carolina, you waiting Africans, step out and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. From Alabama to Suriname, up to the caves of Louisiana, come out, you African spirits. Step out and claim your stories. You raped, slave bred, castrated, burned, tarred and feathered, roasted, chopped, lobotomized, bound and gagged, you African spirits, spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage.
Bore, adie. Obo, adie be. Obo, adie be. Eba, ese. Obo, otuma.
Eba. Eba. Ingu, Oladamare, Jinyami, Olorun, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amun-Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our requests will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxies. And as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Niafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you, and we honor you, and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us. Bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listenings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, We pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is two.
That people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Hello, my name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank. And I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. And we welcome you to the second half of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. Very dynamic and exciting program this evening. And we'll be introducing you to the co-host as well as the guests in just a few minutes. We thank all of you for your patronage. We are here every weekend We have two programs on our weekend edition, one from 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time, 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That program is hosted by Miss LaWanda Chambers and Miss Leola Williams. They dynamic discussions on family, community, politics, economics, and all of the things that are of interest to the African world. And then at 6 o'clock, which is our program now, the second half of our weekend edition, with Brother Alfonso Watkins, who is looking at life for us from a developmental psychology perspective. And I'll be introducing him and his guests very soon. So we welcome you. This is the Time for an Awakening.com network. We are part of the Black Talk Radio Network. And we also have a program on Tuesday from 7 to 9, which is also Central Time. And that's the Black Reality Think Tank, and that's hosted by yours truly. And we deal with economic, political, historical, and issues as well that impact the African world. And then our fourth program, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank family, will be airing this Thursday from 6 to 8. These young ladies who are of the millennium generation, and they will be talking about family and babies and children and husbands and relationships and some of the things that are of interest to that age group. So we thank all of you so much for your patronage. And as the Black Reality Think Tank family is growing, it would not have been possible if it had not been for you, our supporters. And so with that, we are going to launch right into our program. I am so happy to present to you my co-host, Brother Alfonso Watkins. As I said, his programs is based around the Black African developmental psychology, and we are calling it Seeing Ourselves Through the Lens of Our Creator and Ancestors. And as that position, we will then let the elders speak. It is a part of the Wisconsin African Elders Council, which he'll explain to you a little bit, and our guests. So with that in mind, let me introduce to you my good brother, Alfonso Watkins. Good afternoon, Brother Watkins. How are you today?
Peace and blessings to you, Baba. May I have permission to speak?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. It is truly and always a pleasure and an honor to be with you in the listening audience, to fellowship and break bread and once again continue the struggle of our freedom and liberation here in the Americas. This is a production of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And Sankofa Elders Council is a major component of that. But the purpose of the Sankofa Council of Elders here in Milwaukee is to build a council of elders to address the environmental and social conditions and human disparities we face in the city of Milwaukee around the foundational, universal African principles of unity and the principles of cooperation. These principles will provide an overarching and unifying ideology for the collective mission of building a united front with one united voice in the city of Milwaukee for the descendants of Africans and the Milwaukee community. The mission of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is to engage, aid, and assist in the continuous building of a movement and network of elders who are governed by the principles of Ma'at and the Ngubuhisiwe, which is the seven principles of Kwanzaa, to address the disparities and circumstances we face in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as we move into the 21st century. The role and function will be the provision of one voice of spiritual guidance, formation, policy, and the development of programs and services in all areas of human activity, and various projects which will contribute to the growth, self-governance, and economic empowerment of the African-American community in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The other aspect of a critical component of this is the purpose of the think tanks. Each think tank will be led by an elder who has or have a particular level of expertise and experience within the area of science. In the area of science is the think tanks. The role and the mission of these think tanks is to critically analyze our environmental and social conditions in the city through research and create proactive strategic solutions to address the circumstances and the despairs. The 11 areas or 11 area sciences or the think tanks that we are developing here in Milwaukee is spiritual development, health, which is physical and psychological health, education, politics, economics, defense, security, and warfare, law and justice, information and media, arts, culture, and history, science and technology and agriculture, labor, which is once again agriculture and human capital. Once again, that is the foundation in the information as it relates to how we are establishing the Sankofa Council of Elders here in Milwaukee. The areas of the environmental and social conditions as it relates to our health disparities, and these disparities are prevalent in every city in America as it relates to where we are located, is infant mortality, single-parent households, families living in poverty, highest black male and female unemployment, highest black male and female incarceration, highest teenage pregnancies, failing school systems, and the highest level of school dropout rates, highest wage gaps between Europeans and Africans, poor access to health care and quality housing, food deserts, high levels of illiteracy. Milwaukee is one of the most segregated cities in the United States. Also due to the conditions here in Milwaukee, and I'm sure this is impacting other cities, the human trafficking issue of our children, boys and girls, the life expectancy of African American women and men is lower than our European counterparts. So those are some of the disparities that we are facing living in these oppressive and discriminatory cities that we're living in. So today, I would like, I'm going to just jump right on in and start this conversation with Dr. Janine James. And we chose the conversation around infant mortality and maternal deaths due to we have to start with the actual addressing the issue of what our queens, what our sisters are experiencing during pregnancy and the reality of them facing death and the reality of our children not being able or having some discrepancies, some challenges as they enter into the universe. So we want to start there because we must first heal our black women. We must help defend them. We must protect them. We must create spaces for them to be loved and nurtured. So as they bring our children into the universe, as they birth our children into this space, into this place, that the children are coming in with the necessary functional faculties needed to move us into the 21st century. So once again, we chose to start with the womb of the woman in with our first conversation. And once again, we are honored to have Dr. Janine James with us. Dr. Janine James is a diamond here in the city of Milwaukee. She's originally from Chicago, but she came here, I think, in the mid-80s. So she's had a practice here, and she's practiced all over the country as a traveling infant mortality specialist. So without further ado, I would just turn it over to Dr. Janine James, give her opportunity to share a little bit about herself, and then we can go into the conversation. How you doing, Queen Mother? Dr. James?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Dr. James, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, good.
All right, welcome, Dr. James.
Thank you so much for this invitation to speak to your guest regarding a subject that is of great importance, not only to me professionally, but certainly to us as a people and to our future. So it's a pleasure to share with you some of my perspective about this process. And as I listen to your introduction, and I hear you speak about some of the issues that we talk about as it relates to pregnancy, but to remind all of us that this is a process that actually begins before an actual pregnancy, before creation, the word or term referred to as procreation or preconceptual. And so this basically means that what is the environment that a new creation, a new human being starts before it actually has been created. So there has to be a setting that will allow for a normal, healthy process to begin. And this is something that many of us lose sight of, the importance of what happens just before, which may be years before, maybe minutes before, but that does have a bearing on what happens for the future. And so I'm glad that we're talking about not only the role of the mother, but the roles of the father, the role of the family, the role of the community in this very special process. It's the closest thing that I can think of to magic. And right. I'm delighted that we're talking about that.
Yes, yes. And as I'm listening to you, Queen Mother, and just for the listening audience, Dr. James is one of the elders that has helped shape what we are calling, once again, the Sankofa Council of Elders here in Milwaukee. So she's one of our elders. But as we have this conversation, I would just like for us to really focus on, as we move into the 21st century, we are asking the question, what type of human being are we going to need? What type of African, male and female, are we going to need to move our race into the 21st century? So we have to be deliberate and intentional in this thought process. And so as we had this conversation, family, I just would like for us to really focus in on how we have prepared ourselves, how we preparing our children, and then the reality of what we need as far as with a rite of passage, a womanhood and manhood training, actually before our children start to even engage in the act of having sex. We cannot continue to allow this society to determine what our children are going to be, what they're going to need, what type of curriculum, what type of education, what type of socialization they're going to need. So as we had this conversation, I would just like for us to really travel on that frequency. So with that said, Dr. James has delivered over 3,000 children over her 40-year career. And once again, and during these 3,000 children in the 40 years, she has acquired a skill set, a science to help bring forth children through these difficult pregnancies. So once again, I'm just going to turn it back over to you, Dr. James, so you can do what you do.
Well, I want to share with our audience a very exciting time that I am experiencing. I've spent the last week with just one of those 3,000 babies who I delivered 31 years ago. But our relationship began 4 years before she was even born. And we came together this past week to celebrate her completion of training to become a medical doctor. And I cannot help but think about this journey that began 4 years before she was born, when her parents gave her a name, but she was not yet born. And they began a process of preparing themselves for the creation, which many of us very commonly refer to sexual intercourse, but sexual intercourse, while it has more than one role, its primary role is for creation of the next generation. And how do we get that offspring here in a healthy manner? And it's critical that the mother must be healthy and peaceful and comfortable and nurtured and respected, and so that she can do that which is needed to create and to nurture during a period of time which is referred to as pregnancy, and then birth. So there's a lot of work that begins on the front end before we get into the part of parenting and the roles of parents to bring healthy, sound-minded, responsible human beings who will carry on their role of leading us as a group of people where we need to go. It's a process that begins years before the actual creation.
Okay. So from your lens and what you have experienced, could you share with us why is it that African-American women in African, the family, black African-American men and women, why are we having such a difficult time where we have the highest percentage rate of infant mortality and maternal deaths? Could you share with us some of your perspective of what you're seeing and why is that for our race of people?
As a health professional, most often we think about what role we play in the process related to pregnancy. And this, as I stated earlier, is only a small part of that. I think that we have unfortunately forgotten, and maybe we never really knew, that's a possibility, understood this process of creation and understand how fragile this new human being is and how vulnerable it is to a number of things. We certainly can think about what we tell people to eat or not to eat. We talk about being healthy and engaging in healthy behaviors. not smoking, not drinking, not using drugs. But we don't often think of all of the other elements that are important in allowing for this process to move about as safely as possible. And I cannot help but think sadly of many instances where women, upon realizing that they are pregnant, are met with negative experiences. One so often that they hear, particularly from the father of the baby, that this is not my baby. What a terrible thing for someone to hear as they are engaging in the process of preparing for a new human being. Or a young person whose parents become aware that she is pregnant. And the first thing the family does is to beat her, to physically assault her. Parents who are to nurture and support and love their child, but upon learning and perhaps their disappointment regarding the circumstances of the pregnancy, to beat their child without regard of what impact such behavior, such action could have not only for the mother, but the impact that that could have on that developing baby inside that mother. And we do not know all of the factors that can contribute to normalcy or lack of normalcy. But one must think about what impact that type of physical trauma could have directed at this mother. And the efforts to shun, perhaps, that individual, perhaps because they're disappointed that she has not followed some of the norms of being married. And we have to come back to a time, or perhaps we have to begin to learn that our roles must be to educate one another regarding what our responsibilities are, what the consequences may be of us not taking a more loving and supportive role in allowing for this new human being to develop until it can be born and begin that process of going through adolescence and then adulthood.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, as it relates to, you mentioned the role and responsibility of those who are in the immediate circle of the young lady, the interpersonal and the interaction with those who love the individual and how they project some of their perceptions and perspectives onto the young sisters or onto our sisters, the impact that has on her psyche has an impact on the development of the fetus. Am I hearing you correctly?
We have begun some of the research that demonstrates that those mothers who undergo stress, who are afraid can negatively affect the health of that developing baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we even start talking about the genetics, before we even start talking about DNA, epigenetics, the other chemical factors, just that exchange is from research as we move further, as we start to understand what's going on in the fetus and during this different periods, that alone, that stress has an impact.
That stress has an impact. It can result in one of the more common causes of infant death, and that's preterm birth, where the mother goes into labor much too early, resulting in the baby being pushed out of her body. And it is far too young to be able to survive on its own. And we're finding that we have been able to, at earlier stages, support those babies outside of the mother, but many of those babies struggle after birth because they really needed more time inside of the mother. And so there is has been noted a connection between those mothers who undergo a certain degree of stress. We do not have a way to measure stress, but it's not unusual to observe those women who will either lose those babies, called a miscarriage, or whose babies will be born too early and will subsequently die as a result of being born so early.
Okay. I know me and you have had numerous conversations, and as I'm listening to you, what is the, I'm going to say, the normal span for a woman to carry a child before the child enters the universe? I know sometimes in some of our conversations you've mentioned to me that you have had to a certain extent, stitch the sister up or help the baby stay in the womb longer. But I remember you gave me a number. What is that number of weeks?
Well, we typically refer to 39 weeks, and that includes from conception, meaning at the time that this human being begins in the womb or the uterus, and 39 weeks later. That is considered an ideal amount of time that the baby stays within the body of the mother. There are babies, however, who may be born at times earlier than that. So you'll have some people who might say their baby was born 6 weeks early, as I experienced. That is considered a premature baby. And those babies, the earlier they are born, the more premature they are, the greater risk they are of not surviving being born that early. So we'd like to see 39 weeks from the time of conception.
Okay. Could you give us some examples of what causes premature births? What are some of the causes of that?
There are considered perhaps multiple circumstances could cause a premature birth, most of which we don't come up with an answer but probably some more common causes can be infections, particularly sexually transmitted infections that may be present prior to conception or the creation of this human being, or early after this baby is started, if it's exposed to certain infections, can cause a situation that is hostile for the fetus and can stimulate contractions of the uterus and the baby being pushed out too soon. Other things that can occur, as I mentioned, stress may serve as a condition that causes contractions of the uterus prematurely and therefore pushing the baby out too soon. There are some instances where babies are abnormal from the standpoint of their chromosomes or genetic makeup is not normal and may not be able to continue a full-term pregnancy. Trauma can serve as a factor to cause someone to go into labor, which is the reason I raised the concern about a mother being assaulted by family members, father of the baby, or others that could result in babies being born too soon. And substances such as alcohol can initiate abnormalities in the babies. Smoking and other drug use can serve to cause one to go into labor too soon. But then there are other medical conditions. High blood pressure is a big factor that can cause a woman to go into labor too early or could require that she is needing to be delivered early. Because her health has become so bad that she is at risk of losing her life. And so the pregnancy basically needs to be stopped and the baby delivered early, and that could result in the death of the baby. Diabetes is another condition that could cause one to deliver the baby too soon.
Okay. This is a lot of information. So I'm hoping family is taking notes and write things down. I want to move into because I know we're coming up. We got about 10 more minutes before the top of the hour. We've had some conversations around the role that the father plays in him being actively engaged in the whole process, with even going to the appointments, to the doctor's appointments. And I know you have shared some things. Could you share with the listening audience about your experience with having the fathers involved in this process and how important that is?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. But I believe that it's important for me to share that this process of parenting or being a father begins before one starts considering going for prenatal visits with the mother. And we have a number of males who engage in habits or behaviors that are not healthy for them but they have not been aware that this may not be healthy for a new human being that they are responsible for creating. So those men who smoke, those men who use drugs, may create an abnormal sperm that could be detrimental to the development of a new human being. So just as we ask women not to engage in some of these habits because they could be dangerous, we are beginning to look at the fact that some of this on the part of males can be detrimental, at least as it relates to the creation of that new human being. Certainly having a mindset to be available and supportive to be able to protect make the female comfortable even during those times when perhaps they're not feeling so well, to be supportive of them so that they are able to continue their pregnancies. And it may be taking care of other children. It may be cleaning the house. It may be cooking for this female so that she can focus on the nurturing of this fetus. And then, of course, we encourage that males attend visits with the doctor so that observations that they've made can be brought up, so that their questions can be addressed, and so that the two parents have the opportunity to learn as much as possible so that they can be able to allow for the normal process of pregnancy. So I certainly welcome and encourage the fathers of these babies to attend all visits or as many as possible so that their concerns can be brought up and addressed. And their observations are extremely valuable to allow the health professionals to better take care of the mother.
Okay. The next question I have is, and it's not necessarily a question, in our conversations with African-American women in the reality of the maternal and infant mortality death rate and it being so high. But there is conversation or research that is showing that even the sisters that are coming from the motherland, coming from Africa, once they get to America, that they are having the same issue that the sisters that are born in America are having as it relates to the infant mortality and the maternal death. Could you touch on that just a little bit as well?
Unfortunately, there is not enough research on this point, but yes, what we are observing is that there are more bad things that happen to African American women, and even in countries where this is a rare occurrence, when those women from those other countries where there are good outcomes move to the United States and have pregnancies, their outcomes are poorer. And some of the factors that we're observing and only recently being acknowledged is that many African American women have reported some very disturbing circumstances that occur as they are being cared for by trained health professionals. Many have reported that they don't feel as though, even when they report certain symptoms, that they are taken seriously. They are often told that everything is okay, that there's no problem, and without being evaluated properly to ensure that they, as well as their baby, is actually safe. And so you're finding, as we study some of the instances where women have died during a pregnancy or within weeks or months after having a baby, they've noticed something that did not seem to them to be normal. They may have been experiencing headaches. They may have experienced increased blood pressure. And instead of being evaluated critically to determine that this woman is well, unfortunately, she may be sent home and not be managed for the condition. And then as this condition persists and progresses, it can, in some instances, result in serious illness and or serious illness enough that it results in the death of this mother. And so this is probably put into the category of racial practices where you are not listening to nor respecting the observations made by the patient themselves.
So let me try to wrap some of this up before we go into the next hour. So what our queens are experiencing from the external factors. Some external factors is the verbal and nurturing component of how they are being treated while they are pregnant has an impact. What's going on internally as it relates to what's going on inside of the uterus, the fetus, the chemicals that's inside of the uterus within the context of the uterus and the fetus, there's some chemical stuff going on. And then there's the environmental and social toxicity of racism and going to get services in a, I'm going to use the word, hostile environment, and not getting the adequate medical care as well, has all of these factors, is once again having an impact on the ability of African women to have a full-term pregnancy. Is that a good wrap up?
That is correct. And okay. Those women cannot protect themselves. It is something that we must do to support those mothers to make sure that they are safe, that conditions are such that they are respected and listened to, and they are properly evaluated to ensure their safety.
Okay.
Dr. Rogers, I noticed at the top of the hour, is we going to continue or are we going to do the top of the hour piece?
Well, yep, let's take a little quick break. We'll be right back. We'll do that.
Judge us,
mother, mother.
simply cause we wear our hair long.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
This is our weekend edition of the Black Reality Think Tank, part two. We are here every Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time. We appreciate you for your patronage. We are here with Brother Alfonso Watkins and Dr. Jenny James discussing infant mortality. Let me just call your attention also to our other programs of the Black Reality Think Tank family. On Tuesday from 7 to 9, we are here with a similar format. I am your host of that particular program. We'll be talking about issues of history and economics and politics and subjects of that nature. And then on Thursday evening from 6 to 8, we have a group of young millennials who will be on talking about family and children and relationships and husbands and so forth. So we are looking forward to that. That starts this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And then on Saturday at 3 o'clock Central Time, we have the part one of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. And that is a program that's hosted by LaWanda Chambers and Ms. Leola Williams. They are psychotherapists, and they are talking from a psychotherapeutic perspective. And then Brother Alfonso Watkins caps that off from 6 to 8 with a discussion on developmental psychology as well, here representing the Sankofa Elders Council. So we are so appreciative of you for all your support. Also, on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays on this network, timeforanawakening.com, there is African Perspectives with Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. It's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Black Reality Think Tank. And we appreciate that. And also, on Fridays from 8 to 10, we have Time for an Awakening. That's with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard out of Philadelphia. Excellent program of discussion and interviews with very popular individuals. And so that program airs on Friday from 8 to 10, and he does it again on Sunday from 7 to 10 Eastern Time, right here on timeforanawakening.com. And all of our programs are archived. You can go to our website at www.timeforanawakening.com, www.timeforanawakening.com, and you can get any of the programs that we have in our archive. Simply go to the portal that says Podcast Portal, and you pull up the Black Reality Think Tank, African Perspectives, Time for the Awakening, or any of those, and you can listen to any of the programs that have aired on this network. So again, thank you so much. Appreciate your support, and I hope that you will continue to listen. This is a call-in format. Our phone number here is area code 215-490-9832. We are talking with Dr. Jenny James, who is giving us a very in-depth and powerful discussion on infant mortality. We are talking about bringing the next generation to the planet, and so we have to be protective of that. And so we advise you, if you'd like to ask a question or call, simply you can call us here at 215-490-9832. And with that, I am going to turn it back over to my dear brother, Alfonso Watkins.
All right. Thank you, Baba. Thank you. And once again, family, thank those of you who are hanging in here with us. The information that Dr. James is sharing, it is very valuable and critical as it relates to how we are or need to prepare ourselves and our children as this new world order that is coming in and how do we begin to look at in our own personal spaces with our children, with our families. How are we preparing our loved ones, and are we preparing them? That's another question. Prior to us getting on, me and Dr. James was having a little conversation, and I would just give her, or we can go back into that for a few moments before we open our lines up, about what she has noticed as how we are preparing our young people, and are we doing a good job? Where are we falling short at as it relates to moving this next generation of children into their childhood, into their youth, into their young adult, into their adulthood? How are we doing, Dr. James?
Well, I'm not as optimistic as I would like to be. But in that I don't think that we are really thinking about what the skill set that is going to be essential for the success of our children. As I observed this past week, some children ages 10 to 13, and I noticed not only were they focused on the playing of games, talking to friends on their cell phones and smartphones, but I think that to some extent their parents have become comfortable that they don't have to interact as much with their children. And so we're seeing that children are not learning the set of responsibilities that will be critical for them in the future. There was a time when young children, unfortunately, we say, may have had to play a role in supporting the family. They worked in the field or they worked in a factory. Those days are no longer here. But then we have children who grow feeling that their only responsibility is to be entertained. And so they are not going to be really well prepared for the responsibilities of study, to advance in school. Many of them lack an understanding about the responsibilities of earning a living, working a job. And so you will encounter some who are in the workplace who we find have what we consider a bad attitude about the fact that they're working, that somehow money should be made available to them. Their parents are making funds available to them, but realistically, they lack the initiative nor the skills that will allow them to be able to support their own children. So we accept from them not as much, especially when we are met with, as people say, pushback. They don't feel that they should be made or encouraged to study, to do well. And that is going to impact us in many negative ways. For example, there is a dramatic decline in the number of African-American males going into medicine. Now, some of that certainly may be contributed to by some racist barriers to admission to medical school, but frankly, what we're seeing as well is a large number of people basically saying, I don't want to work that hard. I don't want to have that type of demanding lifestyle. And so they are not doing the type of study where they may be intellectually capable of doing so, but have simply decided that I am not going to take on some of those roles. But parents, we cannot accept that. We must have those to follow us to take on the roles of educating others, providing health care, representing us in the legal manner. The list goes on. And so for us to have children who do not understand that you were not simply born to be entertained, you were not simply born to be a sexual being. You were born for the purpose of bringing new life and supporting it in a variety of ways. And we as parents have that responsibility to ensure that our children know that. They're not just born knowing that this is what their roles are, nor how to achieve it.
Right. That's critical. And family, as we continue to have these conversations on these Saturdays from 6 to 8, looking at this through the lens, or seeing ourselves through the lens of our Creator and our ancestors, but also understanding the critical time that we are living in as it relates to understanding ourselves from a Black African developmental psychology perspective, and what we mean by that is understanding what type of African-centered curriculum, what type of African-centered reality, what type of African-centered education that we're going to have to create to move us into the 21st century. Because I think, like Dr. James was just saying, we have gotten too complacent. We've gotten too lazy as it relates to putting in the necessary effort, time, and nurturing into our children at these very critical stages of their development. And we can see the product that we are producing. We can't continue to blame the white man for what they're doing at this stage of the game. We recognize what needs to be done, and we're constantly challenging ourselves or challenging each other to recognize it's time for us to take ownership of the education and the socialization of our children. That is the most precious resource that we have, and we continue to give them over to a system that we recognize, and we see the results that we have gotten from being part of this system. And we still are sending our children to that system. So at some point, we're going to have to grow up. We're going to have to mature in our development and take ownership of producing the type of human beings that we know we need to produce. And so that goes back to what Dr. James was just saying about the reality of of giving our children these phones, buying them PlayStations, of letting them sit up and watch those foolish reality TV shows. It's time out for that, family. So for those of us who understand the seriousness of the times that we live in, we're going to have to create a space. And that's what we are attempting to do here with the Sankofa Council of Elders, where we can create a space for those who are committed and serious about
transforming and transcending the conditions of the society that we live in. Dr. Rogers, did you want to open it up now for phone calls?
Okay. All right. Brother Lush, Montgomery, Alabama.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Dr. Rogers. Good evening, Brother Watkins. It's a pleasure. And Dr. James, it's a pleasure to talk with you.
I have several
questions. I'm only one, and I don't want to take up time. One real question that comes to mind is, Dr. James, is this the thing as us as a people learning the best practices as it pertains to sex between people? Is there such a thing as best practices?
There are curriculums that have been developed, and I am concerned that the curriculums revolve more around the mechanics of the sexual act.
Okay.
And not as much in addition to what is the sexual act about.
Okay.
And so it is important for us in the role of parents to learn more about the curriculum that is provided. I don't have a problem with it being provided in the schools, but I also think that we must have a role in helping our children understand what is the purpose, the principal purpose of the sex act, and not to downplay the importance of the physical and emotional component of the sexual act. But they must understand what is happening simultaneously. And that's the element that I think is lost. And that is an educational component.
Okay. Because what I wanted to lead to, because there is an unspeakable topic amongst us in the Black community, and it's incest. And so it wouldn't be incest if mama has a boyfriend and the boyfriend is taking advantage of the young up-and-coming female teenager. That would be rape more so than anything else. But as it pertains to pregnancy as a result of incest, is termination the only option? Should termination be strongly considered if, in fact, there is an awareness or some sort of indication of sorts that the young lady has become pregnant or impregnated? Should termination be considered strongly under incest as a result of pregnancy?
This is a topic that I would say that I have evolved and probably continue to evolve. And I think that the reason for those individuals who are pushing for termination is because we have a social condition that is unable to recognize the value of creating a new human being, which is not so important about the circumstances on as to how this new human being started. Can we take a position of being supportive of the development of this new human being, and it may require us being able to allow for this pregnancy to continue safely, and then make a decision about who could serve to parent this offspring most effectively. And I think that termination of pregnancy or abortion often is leaned upon because we are attempting to hide the circumstance of the fact that we have been violated. Termination of pregnancy may be sought because that individual feels that they will find it difficult for them to continue in their education or pursuit of a certain profession. Those are things that we must be there for so that no one feels that it is necessary that they make a decision to end a life for that reason. I am, however, though supportive of that mother making the decision, because when it still comes down to it, that mother is in a position of nurturing a baby, a new human being, and she may not be capable of doing so. And I call this an afterbirth abortion. That's my own term. That you may not have aborted the baby and ended its life before its birth, but you allow it to be born and you neglect it. You do not nurture it. You do not support it. You do not love it. You are serving essentially as one who has aborted the life of that new human being. And so I think that this becomes a societal and first off a family decision on how can we best help to continue the development of this new human being so that they can be healthy and supported and an asset to our community and determine who can best serve in the role of parenting that offspring. And I think that once we are able to do that, you will have fewer people who feel a need to terminate a pregnancy, regardless to the circumstances. Be it rape, be it incest, whatever those circumstances, but that they feel supported in being able to carry through this very demanding process of not only being pregnant, but being a parent.
Thank you.
And I would just like to add to that about the curriculum. That's necessary that we're going to have to create where we help males and females understand once again that role of being a parent or the role of engaging in an act, but also understanding the value, where you place in your value at as it relates to violating people or violating each other in those spaces. I think we have to become more in depth and once again in intentional in our conversations with not allowing the society to define what is of value to us, not defining what our principles are, not defining what our interests are, We have to create an African-centered, once again, curriculum or educational system where we are cultivating a different spirit in our children, where they understand what their value are. So I just wanted to reiterate that as, once again, as we build on this conversation, there are African-centered curriculums already out there, but we have to, once again, practice those curriculums and start to implement them and build on them.
Okay, area code 414-588. Would you like to say something? You're just listening. 414-588. Okay, just listening. Okay, Brother Alfred.
Okay, well, so once again, Dr. James, as we talk about a curriculum, as we talk about I'm going to say a practice of implementation. What are some of the things that you suggest that we do to curb this infant mortality and maternal condition or circumstances that we're seeing and what we're dealing with? What are some of the things that you suggest that we start doing?
I think that we're doing some of that right now by having the conversation, but I think about things that we can begin to do in each of our homes that serve to better educate one another about the process of building human beings, what that is about. As I engage with you today, I think about a missed opportunity. The daughter of one of the babies that I delivered just started her menses or menstruation, which was met with some stress because the parent, which was the father, who was with his daughter at this time, had not really thought that he might be in the position of explaining this process to his daughter. I suspect that this may have been done, that she was aware of the actual physical event. And however, I don't recall that anyone used this as an opportunity to celebrate the fact that this event indicated that this was now a person who, as a female, has matured developmentally to the point that she is now able to not only create, but to carry a baby, a new human being, through a pregnancy. This is an important event. And I'm sure that there have been some, as we call it, rites of passage that really speak very directly to the point that there's an event, there's certain physical changes that have arose that indicate that something very special has now taken place. And rather than us fearing it or being embarrassed by it, but really being proud of the fact that we have this very special ability to create and bring forth the future human beings. That's very exciting. but I don't think that we are grasping the significance of some of these physical changes that are taking place. And that's something that we can begin to do. The opportunity is there for many families daily. And I would love to see that we are moving in that direction to help not only our female children understand this, but also helping our male children understand the fact that there are certain physical events, physical changes that indicate that they now are capable of creating new life. And so I would love to see that families take the opportunity to learn some of this information or seek some assistance in learning how to relay this information properly to their children.
Yes, that what you just shared is definitely why it's so important that we create, once again, a curriculum, educational process that is unique to us and to prepare our children. So I totally agree with you. So that's something we're we'll be working on. Dr. Rogers, is there another call?
No, you're good for right now. No, you can go on, brother.
Oh, okay. So Dr. James, now that we then moved into, I mean, we had a different domain, I'm going to say different variations of conversation, and we moved into, I guess, what was it, 7:40? We got about another 22 minutes. What else would you like to share with the listening audience as it relates to this maternal infant mortality, the nurturing of our children in the womb, during birth, after birth? What are some other things you would like to share with the listening audience?
I touched on this a little bit, but I appreciate your giving me the opportunity to further address this. As we are beginning to look recognize to a greater extent the role that racism has played within the healthcare system, it has allowed particularly those of us who are health professionals to reflect more on those features of the healthcare system that do not work and that need to be addressed. And I think that we will need to begin to take a more active role in ensuring that those individuals that are providing health care to us have been properly trained to do so. There are presently no competency criteria that healthcare professionals must demonstrate regarding their ability to know how to best take care of us. There are certain things that many of us as healthcare professionals have learned along the way. But I would love to see that we move toward expecting and demanding that a health facility health professional is required to undergo competency training that helps them to understand the importance of listening to his patients and how to
this conference has reached its maximum duration and will end in 1 minute.
For the health of the mothers of our society. This has not taken place. There is presently no such competency program in that exists for this purpose. But an example of competency that has been implemented in healthcare has revolved around what's referred to as the opioid crisis. I'm licensed in 9 different states to practice medicine, and in each of those states, we receive notice that those state legislators...
Goodbye.
Brother Alfonso?
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Yeah. Who am I speaking with?
This is Dr. James. She's back. I think I got cut off.
Yeah, something happened. I'm not
quite sure. I got cut off, too. Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Okay.
Then.
Well, hello?
Yeah, I'm here. We're here. Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. All right. Well, the last thing I heard about what Dr. James was saying, I thought it was critical that she brought up the reality of legislation and policy and how the impact that it has on the practices in particular sciences. So she was speaking to that, and I think that's a critical component of that we create these councils, these African Council of Elders in our communities, so that we can begin to control the narrative of how services, how programs, how things are going to be implemented toward our people. So I think every city needs to have or begin to create these council of elders so that we can have a nucleus of wisdom and knowledge to begin to advocate and demand for certain services, or once again, the implementation of certain programs, and like Dr. James had just articulated about I'm gonna say credibility and the competence that people are need as it relates to providing the necessary care for us in the medical field. So I totally agree with you, Dr. James, on that. And once again, that's why I'm so thankful to have you in the space, because as we had these conversations, we are, this is recorded, so we can start writing this down and moving this into, once again, that think tank format, so that we can, once again, look at legislation, laws, and policies, and how do we begin
to demand changes in certain spaces and places to get the necessary results that we need for our people. So, Dr. Rogers, is there any a phone call or?
No, you're good. You can go right ahead.
Okay. All right.
Brother Watkins, if I may interject real quick.
Yes.
Dr. James, your training is in gynecology.
Obstetrics and gynecology. In high risk pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you.
Is there anybody else on the line?
No, you go right ahead. I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. So as we continue to build on this, this conversation as it relates to infant mortality and the curriculum that's needed, what type of human beings we need to produce. I'm hoping the listening audience is once again taking some notes, because we're going to try to have a, within the context of our subject matter, we're going to constantly be trying to build on the subject matter. Hopefully we can stay consistent with getting the right people in place to have these conversations. And once again, we will be bringing Dr. James back to further this dialogue so she can go more into the science of what she does. We've been having some surface conversations as it relates to the maternal and infant mortality rate, but there's another level or higher level of that we have to begin to understand so that once again, we can help, our sisters and bring forth, healthy children. And she had touched on the, area as it relates to, the male and his semen. I think that's a conversation that we must go deeper into. So, Dr. James, did you want to have or talk about that a little more, or go a little deeper with that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think that I feel that there is very little that we teach males about what actually is going on during the sex act. I think that I'm often surprised about how little they understand. And however, when I hear some of the commentary often associated with a sex act associated with a pregnancy, and you will have people who are unaware that you don't have to have a favorable relationship with that female that a pregnancy would result. And so you'll have men who are saying, I didn't like that person, or I don't like that person, so therefore it's not possible that I am responsible for bringing about a new human being. And I think that it is important in our education and our parenting and socialization that we teach people that this is not an act to take lightly or to engage with in people that you do not feel comfortable enough that they will potentially be the mother of your child. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is, rather than telling people about making a score or how many people that they can engage in sex with, but to, if you were to be, if you thought about the fact that this person that you're having sex with is potentially the mother of the child that may ultimately have to wheel you in your wheelchair, or to put you to bed or even bury you, you would perhaps make some other decisions. So I think that this is something that we as parents, maybe we don't understand it well enough as we should. But okay, what an awesome responsibility that exists, and what the Sex Act brings and makes possible.
Right. Yeah, and as like I said, as I'm listening to you, Dr. James, it just brings to mind the urgency of our circumstances and our condition in 2020, in the reality of how underdeveloped we are as a people, as a collective group of people, and the reality that we have to create some manhood, womanhood training for every stage of our human development, to help individuals understand what is happening to us spiritually, psychologically, and then the physiology of the biology of our bodies, that all of us really need to be re-educated about what is the nature of this organism that we're traveling in. What is its nature? What is its involuntary and voluntary mechanics of it? I think it's critical that we begin to have and continue to have these type of conversations to help prepare individuals for the next phase of what is transpiring as it relates to this new world order. And what is happening to individuals as it relates to our psychological development, the chemical warfare that is taking place within the context of the foods that we are being exposed to, and the impact that is having on male semen, the things that are happening with the chemicals that the women are being exposed to, that's interfering with the development of the fetus, or interfering with the development of chemicals in the body. So I think there's a whole nother level of understanding that we have to get engaged in conversations and become researchers to come up with solutions to address our problems. Would you like to add anything to that, Dr. James?
I'm always in support of education. I think that we have learned more. There's more to be learned, but it doesn't do much good if we don't pass that knowledge on so that others can benefit from the information that they have acquired.
True. True. Yeah, I think that's, once again, that's a critical area where I think we, as a collective group of people, have not taken ownership of creating the necessary institutions to move this information or create spaces for individuals like yourself to be teaching our children, exposing our children to the wisdom and knowledge of the elders in our communities. So I think we are, once again, at another critical stage of our development as it relates to how do we begin to create these institutions, but not only just create them, but how do we sustain them? How do we create the longevity of them being able to move and stay valuable to the community? So as the dynamics of what's going on with this pandemic, the riots and the protests that are taking place on the planet at this time, I think it's a very opportune time for those of us who understand Pan-Africanism, black nationalism, socialism is an opportunity for us to once again pull in our ranks, close our ranks, and start really pulling together our talents and our resources to create the spaces necessary to create the type of human beings that we need to create. So I'm truly looking forward to having more of these conversations, building with brothers and sisters in other cities and other states and even outside of the country as it relates where we take this conversation from a local to a regional, national, and international platform. So that's it. Dr. Rogers, you got anything you wanted to say or add to the conversation?
Well, no, this is a very dynamic, powerful conversation. I think one of the things that's very interesting is that there has to be more discussion on this because a lot of times our people are not aware of it. So you may not get, you know, folk calling and raising the kind of question you think they're in because they're sort of in a learning mode. And so this is a good teaching opportunity. Our broadcast is a good teaching opportunity, which means that we should probably do this again from another perspective. And that way, you know, you may have gotten people at that point that might take a serious interest, you know, a little deeper interest, rather, in what you know, what's being said and what you're trying to point that you're trying to make. Because very clearly, this is critical. This is the next generation. This is what we're talking about. And maybe a lot of folks just don't see it that way yet. And so the world needs to continue to wake up. This is a wake-up process.
It really is, Baba. It really is.
And so when you're waking up, a lot of folks don't say much, but they're listening, but they haven't woken up all the way yet. So Dr. James, this was powerful, very powerful.
Yes. And we will be having this will be a continuous conversation because, once again, it's an opportunity to fellowship, but the other piece of it is to, I think as we move forward into being able to get to do a podcast, being able to do a Zoom where we can start doing these workshops and presentations where people can actually see a presentation. Right. So it's not just us articulating concepts, but people are able to see the words because this is an abstract exchange. And once again, when people are learning new information, it's always challenging.
Right. Exactly. You got it. Okay. You got 1 minute. Mm-hmm. You want to, anything for next week you want to mention?
Hopefully, I want to thank Dr. Janine James for taking out her time to, have this conversation with us. Thank you so much. It has been very valuable information. We're going to have to revisit it to once again help the listening audience understand some of the terminology, some of the concepts that we were talking about. So thank you for coming out, Dr. James.
Thank you.
Yeah. And for next week, I'm going to attempt to try to get the there's two more MDs that work with the nutrient therapy science. And once again, the nutrient therapy science is understanding how methylation, and methylation is just how the genes work, the functions of our genes, and understanding how certain chemical imbalances interfere with our hormones, interferes with our moods, interfere with how certain body organs are functioning. So hopefully I can get one of them or both of them to come on the show to have a conversation with us about from a chemical perspective, because I'm a licensed clinical psychotherapist, and I'm noticing just talk therapy is going as we move into the past the 2020s. Talk therapy is not going to be as effective as it was in the past.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares?
Okay. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, my brother.
Yeah.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? To save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time.
When the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells.